Aren't you glad that Dravida came and joined us for this weekend? Senior citizens have fun. Senior citizen Hare Krishna devotees have fun. My brother and I were, our birthdays were one day after the next. So every year it's this get together and, you know, kind of a standard question I get from my brother and my sisters is, when are you going to retire? I said, didn't you know I retired when I was 21? I've just been partying. Come and join the party. Senior citizens know how to party. Senior citizen Hare Krishna folks know how to party. Just come and join Dravida's Kirtan. You'll see. Okay, now our topic. Anartha Nivritti and progressive stages of development of anarthas. So for those of you that registered, you'll receive in your mailbox, if you left your email address, the section of Bhakti Sandarbha that this comes from and some of the other things come from. It's the largest of Jiva Goswami Sandarbhas, and he treats this topic of Anartha Nivritti comprehensively from text 152 to 163 or something like that. So you may or may not be interested in going through his language, but if you are, you'll receive it. Just register, please. And leave your email address. So the subject here is what we've heard, what the definition of anarthas or anartha is. From where, this is my presentations, where does it arise from, and how is it distinct in similar but also distinct from sin and offense, and then its consequence of anarthas. So now Jiva Goswami is going to share with us, and I'm going to share what he shares with us. There are symptoms by which one can know anarthas are there. And there's a progression in severity of offense and, in turn, severity of anarthas. So it's a nice topic and fits in very well. The good news is tomorrow morning it's how do you get rid of these things, but this is so we know what it is. Just like a physician. It's really hard to find a good physician. And when you find a good physician, one of the things about a good physician, they can tell you what's the illness and how it developed. So you know what the root of the thing is, so you can address not just the symptoms of the illness, but how you got there. So that's what this is. The symptoms and how you got there, then you'll have some idea what to do. That's coming tomorrow morning. I'm sure others are also sharing in their wonderful way. Okay, so there's, he doesn't use the word psychological, it's my word, but psychological manifestations which show that aparadha is there. Some offense has been made, some aparadha is there as a result, and like a physician. What are your symptoms? What do you feel? Etc. So this is the verse, it's text 153, or Anuched 153 from Bhakti Sandarbha. There are faults, such as crookedness, lack of faith, failure to remain steady in worshiping the Lord, becoming absorbed in material objects, laxity in performing bhakti, and pride in one's performance of bhakti. If these faults are hard to remove even by bhakti in the form of association with great devotees, this is the result of offenses. There may be traces of offense from previous lives. It's from my study of Tattva Sandarbha. Jiva Goswami explains his methodology. So here's, I'll share. His methodology is very similar to Vedanta Sutra. First, some declaration, like Atato Brahmajigyasa from Vedanta Sutra. Now is the time to inquire about the Absolute Truth. There's a Sanskrit term, just some declaration. Next, Jiva Goswami refers to verses of Srimad Bhagavatam that support that, or the verses of the Bhagavatam are saying that. And, by the way, that connects with something from Vedanta Sutra, because Bhagavatam is a commentary on Vedanta Sutra, so he's just, in his own words, saying what the Vedanta Sutra says, and then the Bhagavatam is explaining the commentary on that. And then he'll also make references from other sources, and he names what those other sources are. Authentic sources. And from time to time he'll deal with doubts, standard out there in the spiritual marketplace, doubts about some statement, and then he'll address the doubt. That's his methodology. So here's his statement. And then, largely in that anuchade or text, he addresses this, then goes to the next. And they're very logical and sequential. Okay, so we'll start with the first one, this crookedness. The word that he uses is kautilyam, and sometimes is kutilata, or crookedness. And so the image here is a hook, like a fishing hook. You put something on, some bait on the end of the hook, so the uncontrolled tongue fish comes and tries to chomp on the bait, and he gets the hook instead of the bait. Oh, you'll see the connection, why the image is there. A similar Sanskrit root word is the Abhimanyu is the so-called husband of Radharani, and Abhimanyu has a mother and a sister. And a sister is crooked, both by her physical stature and her mentality. So she's Kutila, and her mother is Jatila, because she has a jut, or pile of massive hair on the top of her head, and doesn't look straight. Her mind is crazy. Jatila and Kutila. So this is a painting illustrating a pastime of Krishna, where Krishna was playing a trick. He wanted to be with Radharani, and so Krishna, knowing when Abhimanyu was out of the house, he came disguised, looking just like Abhimanyu, and told Jatila and Kutila, Krishna is going to come very soon, disguised, looking just like me. So there's different versions. One is stand at the archway above the door and throw mud balls and cow dung balls at them, at him when he comes. And then another is, you see, she's beating him with a stick. So I'll go and protect Radharani because we don't want Krishna disguised as me to come and have any contact with Radharani. You guard the door, I'll guard Radharani. So Abhimanyu came home and Jatila, with her crooked nature, was insulting Abhimanyu, saying, "You cheater, we know who you are. Get out of here," and smashing him and bashing him. And that's Krishna in the background holding his peacock feather and crown, while the young gopis, the friends of Radharani, are enjoying the fun because they know what's going on. So, crooked. Kutila. And the nature of this crookedness is one presents oneself in a certain way, but actually there's something else that's really going on inside. Not straightforward. So, by the way, tomorrow morning you'll hear that the one of the essential remedies of anartha is cultivating the quality of saralata, which is the exact opposite of this one. Just being very straightforward. We'll hear some more tomorrow. But one who is not conscientious in being straightforward, when there is offense, then anartha arises in the heart, and a symptom of it is crookedness. Kotilyam or kutilata. One wants to present oneself different than what one really is. And there's a purpose. There's some motive. When I enter into a relationship with somebody, whatever I do, smile and say something nice, that I want something. It's not really the person, it's I want something. And that somebody can help me get that something, or that somebody has something I want, or there's another agenda behind the back. And it's part of the reason for the hook is it's like fishing. So there's crookedness in one's dealings to get some selfish benefit. And this isn't in Jiva Goswami's Bhakti Sandarbha, but in Hitopadesh, the same idea is there. A story of a lion. And the lion has become really old, and he's not able to go hunting and gathering his meal. So he sees a wanderer coming through the forest. And he tells the wanderer, so, you know, it's a talking lion. He says to the wanderer going through the forest, "My dear sir, I've become a sadhu. And I've taken a vow that I will give charity every day to someone, and good fortune, providence has arranged for you to come. I'd like to give you some gold, but you have to come here to receive it because I'm too old to move. And don't worry, I won't eat you. I've become a vegan, in fact. So I don't eat people anymore. So please come and accept this charity." And the innocent sojourner through the forest believes the lion and becomes his meal. And, you know, the story is told, I mean, the purpose behind the story isn't told, but there are persons who are in the guise of spiritual personalities that don't have spiritual merit, but they promise things, and they, so that's the hook, they're crooked, and their interest is in various ways to exploit the follower without being able to give something that's genuine, because they don't have that something that's genuine. They're simply posing themselves and taking advantage of the innocence of the sojourner in the forest of material existence. The example, this is Jiva Goswami, he points to Duryodhana as having this quality of crookedness. And reference from Mahabharata is, you know, what was inside and what was outside was altogether different. This shows actually what was inside. But when Krishna came with his peace mission from Indraprastha to Hastinapur, it was known that Krishna was coming, and it was known the reason for Krishna's coming. So Duryodhana arranged a royal reception. And you know, all the details of cut banana trees and arches and flower petals and the whole thing. Rose water sprinkled on the road and musicians lining as Krishna was entering. And he went outside his palace to receive Krishna before Krishna, as Krishna was entering into Hastinapur. And then there were some sweet words, as is customary when receiving an exalted person. So he spoke some sweet words to Krishna, including, you know, reminding Krishna that you are our cousin, and I know that you are equal to everyone, you're not partial to anyone, and I love you, specifically says. I'd like to invite you to come to my palace for your meal. Let me receive you. And Krishna was very blunt and said, one may receive a meal for either of two reasons. This is a nice message for sannyasis that travel here and there, or anybody you're invited to go somewhere. When you're hungry, that's a good reason to eat, but I'm not hungry. And someone may eat something anyway, even if they're not hungry, just because the person inviting them, there's some love. But in you I see no love. You say you love me, but look how you treat the Pandavas. You can't treat the Pandavas this way if you love me. So, in fact, he says in Mahabharata, that there's only one place in the whole of Hastinapur that's fit for me to take a meal. And that's at the home of Vidura. That's where I'm going. So Krishna went to the home of Vidura, and this is that scene, a painting of that scene where the wife of Vidura was so excited, she got a little mixed up and gave the banana peel instead of the banana to Krishna. There's different versions of that Mahabharata portion. But his happiness was being with his devotee and accepting offerings that were made with love, whether he was hungry or not hungry. This reciprocation of love. So, the present day application in terms of spiritual endeavor, spiritual progress, spiritual paths, in the present day, people who hear scriptures or worship the Lord, guru and devotees, externally by internally not respecting them because of offense, they're crooked. So there's an external display of something, but inside it's not genuine. This is different than you're cultivating. This is like explicitly crooked. Thus, fools who are not crooked become successful by an abhas of worship. So, I may not have deep attachment for the deity, or for the name, or for Krishna, or for the guru, but I somehow have some faith in the process, and so I go forward it. So I'm at the abhas stage of bhakti. And then that person will be successful. But crooked people will never become successful, no matter how much they do this and that and the other. So intention and faith and being straightforward and honest about one's situation is important. And the conclusion in this little section is, even looking within yourself, your own introspection, you can't even be honest with yourself about yourself, what to speak of your dealings with others. or the name, or the scripture, or Krishna, or the process of bhakti. And one of the classics is Duryodhana, who supposedly had affection for Krishna, chose the armies of Krishna because calculating, my goodness, Krishna's not going to fight. And then there's Krishna's armies who will fight, and they're, you know, huge armies. I'll take the armies, please. I want to win the battle. But he stood by Krishna's head, but Arjuna stood by Krishna's feet, saying, oh, don't fight, that's okay. I want you. Big difference. Now, this is extra, it's bonus. But the bonus part is, of course, Jiva Goswami chronologically came before Bhaktivinod Thakur, and needless to say, Bhaktivinod Thakur became well educated in Rupa Goswami's writings and Jiva Goswami's writings. So he presents the same message in a somewhat different way, or slightly different way, where this kotilyam, namabhas is a subset of that. In other words, to do namabhas, you've got to be crooked. Instead of when you're crooked, you do namabhas, or you make a fence. So his description, his treatment of this is, there's degrees of offense, slight and severe. And that the slight offenses, there's two categories. Samanya has two categories. One is chaya namabhas. Chaya means shadow or reflection. One wants to clear the offenses and thus is sincerely striving to clear offenses and reach pure bhakti. So, just going back. When we have discussions on a topic like this, devotees go commonly, oh my God, I see I do all these bad things, I'm such a crummy devotee, and I'm depressed. What's the use? So don't do that. Do this. If you see there's something that shouldn't be there, you try to clear that something that shouldn't be there and be eager to perform bhajana kriya nicely, and then the anarjana vritti follows behind. So trying to clear, that's this chaya namabhas, slight offense. Then, pratibimba namabhas, this is a different circumstance. Consciously, one performs bhakti to get something else. This kutinati, excuse me, kotilyam. I do something because I want something. Now that's, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that's four reasons why people engage in devotional services. I want something, or I want something, or I want something, or I want something. So it's not pure that there's this category. But still, there's some hope or faith in the process and in the teaching and the teachers, and even though I want something else. Sarvakama. So in that case, one may feel the presence of the Lord, but one doesn't feel the full mercy of the Lord. It's like when there's clouds in the sky, you know it's daytime because there's light in the sky. But the fullness of the light of the sun you don't feel, and the heat of the sun isn't as full as if there's no clouds in the sky. Like that. Then there's very big offenses. And with those very big offenses, it's nam aparad. And even the presence of the Lord, you cannot feel. If the cloud is not too dense, then we can see the light of the sun, but we can't feel the heat of the sun. But when the cloud is really dark, then both the heat and the light become severely blocked. So the message here is there's degrees of severity in this crookedness versus straightforwardness. So there's degrees of being the benefit that one can receive from sadhana practices will be greater or lesser. Jiva Goswami takes this topic and goes a little further with it and says, it's not necessarily literal, but it's at least it's directional or figurative. If one commits 100 offenses, one loses satyam, or the capacity to be truthful. This initial effect of committing offenses is one becomes hypocritical, including one's ability to be self-critical or honest and looking in introspection, self-analysis. It's not like, you know, you do 100 times and a bell rings and you fall into another bucket. It's not meant like that. If one commits 1,000 offenses, one loses one's capacity to perform austerity in the practice of bhakti. For example, following the regular principles may get compromised and you find it difficult to even do that, and rising early and, you know, becomes troublesome. One becomes slackened in the things that are helpful for bhakti. And 10,000 times you can't practice. I've had discussions with devotees that, you know, I can't even look at my bead bag. You probably, huh?
And the devotee could not look at the deity. I was looking at him, he was looking this way, this way, this way, this way. He cannot look at the deity. It felt so bad in his heart. Something he'd done, I don't know what it was.
Satchinandan Swami told this story. A devotee from Germany was in Vrindavan. And what you're supposed to do in Vrindavan, especially, I mean it's probably elsewhere, but you set the price before you get in the rickshaw, and then you pay the price when you get off the rickshaw. So the German devotee knew that. He set the price, and the rickshaw wala doubled the price. And the German devotee lost it. He just started, you know, getting really angry and yelling, and, you know, gave the price that he had committed to the rickshaw wala. The rickshaw wala threw it on the ground and walked away. And that devotee fell down. Because, you know, it's just a rickshaw wala, but he's a brijbasi, and he just... And years went by, Satchinandan Swami described, and he just couldn't pick up his bead bag. And then when he finally tried to pick up his bead bag, it was too heavy. Couldn't pick up his bead, and he was crying and sharing this with Satchinandan. He knew in his heart what was the cause of his fall down, offending a rickshaw wala in Vrindavan. And it's that, you know... Anyway, be careful. Not only with rickshaw wallahs. Be careful with... Huh? Hare Krishna. Then, following this crookedness as the severity of offense increases and the reaction of the offense or the presence of the symptoms of that offense continue to grow, ashraddha, lack of faith. And he gives the example, once again, of Duryodhana. When Duryodhana, who said, I love you, turns around and wants to kill Krishna with his friends, Krishna understood exactly what was in his heart, of course, because he's in his heart. And when the signal was given to attack Krishna, the thought was, kill Krishna, and the Pandavas are going to become wimps, because their strength comes from their relationship with Krishna. So Krishna's dead and we've won. So Mahabharata describes a partial manifestation of the universal form was manifest right there in the assembly, and everybody saw it. Now, in the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada writes, the first time one saw this universal form was Arjuna seeing. The explanation given is this is a partial universal form, not the same, not the full universal form. In any case, when Duryodhana saw it, everyone became silenced, but in his heart, he couldn't believe it. It was like some mystical thing, and he, you know. One of the purposes, Prabhupada writes, of Krishna being asked to show his universal form is so that in Kali Yuga, someone says, I'm God, you can say, show me your universal form. And they say, well, you don't have the eyes to see it. Well, then give me the eyes to see it. No, you're not qualified. I won't give you the eyes to see it. But although he could see, everyone could see, he couldn't see. He couldn't accept. He didn't have faith. And then, unlike Duryodhana, Jiva Goswami mentions, Shaunaka and Prahlad. So Shaunaka, just by hearing from Suta Goswami the whole of Srimad Bhagavatam, he became ecstatic in devotion. 7 days, 7 nights non-stop hearing. Is that normal? He became ecstatic in devotion, hearing from Suta Goswami. Actually, that was Maharishi Pariksit. That's possible, that the power of the sound vibration can enter when one's heart is not crooked. But when one's heart is crooked, then also one becomes faithless. So although Prahlad was tested severely, his faith didn't waver, his acceptance of the Lord's protection didn't waver, and in fact, the Lord gave his personal protection again and again, much to the amazement of Hiranyakashipu, who was crooked and didn't have faith in what he saw. There's a nice description of this particular situation where Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Lord Vishnu, in order to examine the heart of Prahlad, he didn't catch him until he was about to crash. So as Prahlad is falling through the sky, Prahlad didn't panic or scream or have anything other than full confidence in the Supreme Lord and his relationship with him. And then he caught him. That's when one's heart is pure. And so the contrasting position is that of Hiranyakashipu. He witnessed the power of bhakti. He asked Prahlad, where do you get your strength? He saw the power of bhakti. He saw the power of the bhakta, his own son. But he didn't have faith. He couldn't understand the depth of Prahlad and the power of bhakti. Or shraddha. Then he concludes this Anuchet 153 by saying, there may be circumstances like Maharishi Pariksit. He didn't show the power of bhakti by being protected as Prahlad was protected. So the devotee may not show that power. But one whose heart is pure and not crooked, then one can see even the exhibition of conduct is not there. One can understand the character. And when this ashraddha condition, one can't see. Even you see, you can't see. Just like, you know, the coveting of wealth, and you can't see the power of the glory of Maharishi Pariksit. That's two. Three more to go. So if offense continues and progresses and the anartas in the heart continue to mature more and more, then the next is Bhagavan Nishtha Chavakas Twanta Tu Antarabhiniveshit Absorption in things, internal absorption in things, antar abhinivesh. Whoops. What happened? Oh, that's that thing. Antar abhinivesh means internal absorption. And Bhagavan Nishtha is our concentration or firm faith in Bhagavan. Bhagavan Nishtha Abhinivesh. So here it is again. Bhagavan Nishtha Chavakas to Antar Abhinivesh. Internal absorption in things which destroy our concentration upon Bhagavan. So, the example he gives of this, very interesting. I think you'll become a Jiva Goswami fan like me just by hearing these things. The example he gives is Bharat Maharaj. So there's this question, if you've been around the Hare Krishna movement for a while, you'll hear this question many times. How is it possible that Bharat Maharaj came all the way to the stage of Bhava Bhakti and he fell? You've heard that one before? So Jiva Goswami explains it. And he explains it by making reference to a verse from that chapter, Canto 5, Chapter 8. His heart afflicted by unfulfilled desire. You can't see it so well on the screen. His heart afflicted by unfulfilled desire. That's from his previous life. There was an unfulfilled desire from his previous life. And so, Bharat fell from his practice of yoga, from his detachment from material enjoyment achieved by bhakti, and even from his worship of the Lord by the Lord's special arrangement, the Prarabdha Karma, through the appearance of the young deer. So now the Prarabdha Karma, listen carefully, Prarabdha Karma cannot negatively impact bhakti. Say it the other way. Bhakti can destroy Prarabdha Karma. So it doesn't mean, you know, it's not going to get cold in Chicago or warm in San Diego. It's going to get cold in Chicago, but it's not, the experience of suffering isn't effective if you're absorbed in bhakti. So the presentation of the deer was the manifestation of Prarabdha Karma. He had some unfulfilled attachment and it manifests. So then he explains, it should be understood that it is not possible that Prarabdha Karma could create obstacles to bhakti, since that karma is weak. Rather, it was offense from a previous life that caused this obstacle. The obstacle wasn't the deer. The obstacle was his abandoning bhakti. He consciously chose, just as we consciously choose to practice, you can consciously choose to not practice or slacken. So he chose to slacken and stop his practice. Where did that choice come from? It came from a previous offense. Interesting. It's like those of you that have computers, probably everybody here, when you delete files, what happens? They're stored somewhere. They're in the, what do you call it, recycle bin or dust bin or something like that. And they're over there. They're just not accessible over here anymore, but they're over there. So if you want, you can conveniently go to that trash bin, click, and it goes back where it was. It can be accessed again. Yes? Stored files. and then in the trash bin. So bhakti can delete those files, but they're over there somewhere. If there's offense, the offense can then trigger them to be activated again. Interesting, isn't it? Antar avinivesh. Antar avinivesh means, as the translation read, absorption, internal absorption, in things which destroy our nishta, or nishta. That's the problem. Maintaining attachments. Even after understanding so many instructions this matter, guess what? That's one of the 10 offenses. And guess what? That's what Bharat Maharaj did. Even at the bhava stage, there was a previous lifetime's offense. He doesn't say what it was. And so that tendency was stored, and the appearance of the deer triggered the tendency, and it went back on his hard drive. And he gave up bhakti. The good news is, the benefit of the bhakti he had performed didn't leave him. Krishna is very kind. Krishna gave him remembrance of his previous life as Bharat Maharaj, even the body of a deer. And in the next life as Jad Bharat, his body of Bharat Maharaj and the deer. He wasn't going to make the same mistake again, for sure. So we should also not repeat our mistakes, for sure. Because, as Jiva Goswami says, everyone, without exception, that's all of us, yours truly included, back there somewhere there's sin and there's offense, and it's stored in that trash bin. So when something out here triggers your affinity for that, stay with bhakti and don't decide to abandon bhakti in favor of becoming the enjoyer of some unfulfilled desire. Very nice, isn't it? Very nice. You want to go back to Godhead? Understand what Jiva Goswami is saying. This is Anartha Nivritti exercise, compliments of Jiva Goswami's erudition and deep devotion. This internal absorption can become obsessive. Each one of us has something that we're attracted to and internally cultivating something. And if it's not Krishna, it's going to be something. It can become obsessive. Even if one is completely aware that something, some sense gratification or whatever it is unfavorable to one's devotional service, one can't stop that absorption if you're absorbed. Remember the verse from yesterday? Bhayam dvitiyam avinivesh. There's that same word again. Dvitiyam avinivesh takshat. Nice verse. Dvitiyam avinivesh. Just something other than Krishna. Take your pick. Or a combination, whatever your thing is. Whatever your material contamination is, stay absorbed in that. And you won't reach Krishna. And in that condition, depending on the severity of the attachment and this progression of aparad, the contaminations of heart that block the power of bhakti, be very careful. The example in Bharat Maharaj's absorption in the deer is when the deer disappeared one night and he was going mad looking for the deer. Where's the deer? Oh, my deer, where's the deer? He saw the moon. And he, in madness, thought, oh, the moon has given shelter to the deer, because there's a mark on the moon that looks like a deer. Oh, my friend, the moon has given shelter to the deer. He was mad. He was so absorbed. Enough that he gave up bhakti. It's not to say, you know, if you see a baby deer, you should leave the baby deer because you might have a problem. Don't give up your bhakti. Don't let your bhakti slacken when you're doing your duties of life, whatever those duties are, whatever your stage of life is and whatever's going on. Don't neglect bhakti because you get too busy. It happens. Even too busy with service that you neglect your sadhana. Don't do that. You're opening the door for problema. Then he concludes this, before we go on to the next progression, that in the case of Gajendra, in his previous life as a king, he also made an offense. And that offense caused him to offend Agastya, which resulted in his becoming Gajendra. Pretty big obstacle. Become an elephant. Offenses, unknown offenses back there somewhere can be very, very problematic. So we have to accept the offense, the symptom of the offense when it comes, or the difficulty, the obstacle when it comes. But going forward, be very careful. You don't want to become an elephant. Or a deer. Or some other misfortune. Be careful. And if offense continues to grow, bhakti saityam, slackening or laziness, lack of endeavor in the core practices of sadhana bhakti. If there's laxity in bhakti, which is antithetical to bhakti, and doesn't disappear even by practice of bhakti, full of taste in a devotee, able to make distinctions. Behind that, there's offense that's now grown. So tomorrow, what to do? That's tomorrow morning. But this is the topic of monitoring the symptoms of the disease as they escalate. So we may not be able to recognize the offense and be weak. Krishna is very kind, and Krishna will help if there's just reaching out a little bit, and he'll send a devotee, and we just say yes to the devotee who's reaching out. But sometimes it's very hard for people to accept the mercy of Krishna that comes through Krishna's devotee. It happens. So we have to be very careful. And willingness, when we're in a weakened condition, to receive some kind association of nice devotees, Krishna's representatives. When one commits offenses, all of a sudden one becomes again very concerned on one's petty, material, or sense gratificatory needs. One's attitude becomes slackened to the very extent that one becomes extremely weak in spiritual practices. One may come to the stage of almost losing taste in devotional service. We see it. Each of us. Stick around a while, you'll see some more. So, the purpose is not finger pointing. The purpose is, like medical doctor, to understand what's the disease and the severity of the disease and the remedy according to the capacity of the person to receive some remedy. Like spiritual science, medical science. In this case, spiritual science. And in number 5, swa bhakti adhikrita manitvam. pride in one's achievement in devotional service, which is similar in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's, the anarthas that arise from trying to be the enjoyer of a little success in bhakti. So he, Jiva Goswami, points to Daksha, who was so proud of how many yagyas, this yagya, that yagya, the other yagya, I'm a yagyapati. He was famous amongst the circle of brahmanas as being, you know, very special in his capacity, and having that capacity, because his heart wasn't pure, he was proud. So proud that he was willing and, in fact, executed offense to Lord Shiva. Twice. Disrespecting devotees is a no-no. And then we saw, he got excused from the offense, but the tendency remains, so he did again with Narada. Filled with pride, and his chastisement of Narada was again reciting, I'm up here and you're down there. I've done all these yagyas and you haven't. You're depriving my sons of the position of doing yagyas because of your, you know, mistaken understanding of the Vedas, you so-called renunciate. Shame on you. You're bad. I curse you. I'm powerful. I curse you. Narada was thinking, fantastic. I now have a pass to stay, to keep moving all the time. Prabhupada writes in his Bhagavatam commentary, I've also been cursed by many parents of devotee children who, because they have now become devotees, the parents curse me. Now I'm transferring that curse to my sannyasi so I can stay in one place and translate so they can travel and do the service for me. Right in the Bhagavatam purport. When pride comes, we are already fallen, and after that is detail. One becomes so occupied with the feelings of pride and self-glory that one starts to explicitly prove to everyone about one's own greatness. Now, there was a period of time, I was discussing this a little bit with Dravida at Prasadam yesterday. There was a period of time when Prabhupada was present and he engaged many powerful, capable, get-things-done, really dynamic personalities, and Prabhupada was able to curb their pride very effectively. I mean, not in all circumstances. Some stepped out of line and he dealt with it. But after his departure, their pride just went like a balloon and went here and there proclaiming their greatness in very offensive and wrong ways. And they had problems. The pride is pernicious. It's very, very, very problematic. Beware of pride. So, humble. So that's what we're going to hear tomorrow morning. Humility and straightforwardness in dealings, these are consistently recommended to help minimize, diminish, and relieve yourself of unwanted impurities of heart. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, and we'll hear some more tomorrow. One forgets the mercy of Guru and Krishna. One of those fellows on his way down said, well, it's not only that Prabhupada did some great things, I did some things too. Splash. The pool of material existence. How does that happen? Pride. And how does a pride, if you, the sense of being the receiver of descending mercy goes away, and one thinks oneself as the creator of one's good fortune. and abilities and punar mushuka bhava. It happens. This sort of mentality is a result of offense. This attitude will inevitably force one to commit more offenses against the other devotees. Look like our president-elect over there on the left. And it's hard sometimes because pride weighs us down and people are trying to reach and help us up and we're too busy holding on to our pride. Tough when you're in Maya. No humility. Start with humility. And be willing to enter into relationships with devotees where you can openly discuss these little private struggles and be a little honest about what's going on, or at least hear from them what's going on. Almost done. This is now comparison. I meant to say at the beginning, this is Jiva Goswami's analysis of the stages of progress of anartas from its beginning and more severe and more severe and more severe. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur does the same. It's slightly different, but the same elements are there. He speaks of mist of ignorance and clouds of anartas and indicates they have sequential or degrees of manifestation, and then the disease accelerates. So Asat Krishna, this is Harinam Chintamani. If you remember from the first morning, it was just yesterday morning, the Bhajana Rahasya indicated this Asat Krishna. Asat Krishna came from, its thirst for the temporary things comes from ignorance of spiritual truth. So, thirst for the impermanent, then comes offenses, that's very similar to the Bhajana Rahasya sequence, and then this miserliness of heart, or weakness of heart. So these are clouds. It's just like, you know, when the sun of the holy name, the metaphor is beautiful. When the sun of the holy name enters the heart, so you're hearing properly, you're chanting carefully, you're hearing carefully with attention, that sound vibration enters the chamber of the heart, like Rupa Goswami says. And when he chants, the mind becomes stunned and the senses become inert. But somebody that's offensive, there's clouds. And the sun of the holy name in the heart is blocked. What to do? So we continue. In any case, this is Namabhas, with faith that the holy name is my real shelter, although I've got these things in my heart from previous life and or from this life. I have faith in the holy name. We can take shelter. So when Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes that the cloud of anartha is covering the sun of the holy name, he says that after committing offenses, the resulting effect is hridaya dorbalyam. So we know what's the right thing to do, we don't do. We don't do with wholeheartedness because of the weakness of heart. So these are the types of, this is review. Tucha shakti, attachment to objects not related to Krishna, manifest even as attachment to the pain that we have experienced. Someone said something mean to me, or someone something. We just get absorbed in it. It happens, right? Huh? I know people that if they don't have a problem, they invent one. They find something to find painful. Or they may be a legitimate source of pain. I was just when in Detroit. A home program, and one evening in Troy, the next morning, a mother with a 2.5-month-old child and a 6.5-year-old son, her husband died the next morning after the program, heart attack. No indication of anything, medical problem, just... So now how to help that person? We don't... There's lots of things not to do. But so the grief that's there from loss, but how you move beyond the grief that's natural, there has to be some acceptance of a transcendental mission and purpose of life. But if you can just stay within the pain and the grief without other anecdotal examples, it can happen. One can just get lost. And, you know, the light, they can't see the light. They can only see the grief and the loss and the pain. I added here, this is similar to Bhagavan Nishtha Chavakas. It's different, but it's similar. Then one becomes deceitful, or finding faults in others, or Kautilyam. This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's list. And Matsarya, I become envious of others, and I don't have faith in that which is truly spiritual. I find some problem with it, or the process, or the person, or the circumstance, or something. You just can't see Krishna's hand in things. So, this is the sequence that he... characteristics of weaknesses that manifest. And this is the final slide. What to do? Just take shelter of the holy name. And there are some specific remedies which I've slightly mentioned, but we'll cover them tomorrow morning. There's hope. It's not all dark. There's a lot of darkness, but there's also light. And we're being given the opportunity to know the nature of that darkness and how it can get darker and how it can get lighter. And of course, it's not just something we do, it's dependent upon Krishna's mercy, but Krishna is very merciful. We just, in the right mood, need to turn to him and become free from offenses and clear those anartas so the brilliance of the sun-like rays or illuminating rays of the holy name can fill our heart. Okay, so any discussion? You have a microphone? Okay. Speak slowly.
I could not understand that about the moon, spot on the moon. And related to Bharat Maharaj.
Yes, the spot on the moon that looked like a deer and thinking that the moon gave shelter to the deer. So you want me to explain that some more? Okay. When you've looked at the moon, you sometimes see marks on the moon. So there's a mark on the moon I've seen that looks like, you know, a rabbit with ears, or it looks like an animal. Looks like. So he saw that and thought, oh, the moon has given shelter to the deer. How fortunate, how compassionate is the moon that the deer has been given shelter by the moon. He was seeing the deer in the moon. He was mad because of this attachment. So pass the microphone this way. Turn it on. Two questions, yeah? It's really high technology, this microphone.
The first one is, would it be correct to say that if pride is manifesting, then all the four other psychological manifestations of anartha are also there? Because...
Is it fair to say which now?
That if one has pride, then the four other manifestations are also there.
If one is bright?
If one has pride.
If one is right?
Pride.
Pride! Ah, pride. Okay. I'm half deaf. Please excuse me. So if one has pride, then these things will come. Is that your question?
Right. Will the other four also already exist then?
Say it again slowly.
Would the other four also already exist then?
Will they already exist? Is that your question?
Right.
Well, let's be honest. We all have all those things in different degrees. And they... One may be more prominent and another may be more prominent and so forth. And some, you know, maybe an assortment of them are more prominent than the other ones. These are contaminations of heart. But specifically, he mentioned, so the answer to your question is yes. And the reference here is, these are symptoms that even when bhakti is performed in the presence of elevated personalities, they don't go away. In fact, they tenaciously grow. That's what this subject is. This is the indication of anartha due to past offenses and so forth. So, and then it's in degrees. So the answer to your question is yes. But this is a different application of that same topic. That okay. Second.
In thinking about the stages of bhakti, there's anartha nivritti and then there's nishta ruchi and it goes on
yes.
eventually to prema.
Yes.
So would it be fair to say that until the stage of anartha nivritti is completely cleared, one cannot have nishta?
Or cannot have success? That the word? Success?
Nishta.
Nishta. Well, I'm not sure I understand your question, but where's Shravan? Shravan asked a similar question yesterday. Not same, but, you know, related question yesterday. It's these stages of bhakti, the nine stages, are there for analysis purpose. It's not that when this one ends, then you move out of this bucket into that bucket, and then this one begins, and then you fill up the bucket, and then that one begins. It's not like that. They're spanning the whole thing. You know, Shraddha goes all the way to the end, and Bhajana Kriya goes all the way to the end, and Anartha Nivritti goes all the way to the end. Read Madhurya Kandamani. I'll show you the chapter where it says it. So, yes, the stage of nishtha has a certain symptom. And that certain symptom is most of the anarthas are removed. Nashta prayeshu abhadreshu. It's an interesting word. Prayeshu. Like, I mentioned it yesterday. Prayenal payushakyabhya kalavasmin yugejana mandaksamanda mateo mandabhagya kupadrita says Canto 1, Chapter 1. The age of Kali is symptomized by good qualities are prayenal, nearly gone. Good qualities are nearly gone. So the same word where anarthas are nearly gone, or at least whatever is there, bhakti is so strong they can't manifest. They're still there, but bhakti is so strong they can't manifest. That's the nishtha stage. So does that answer your question? Okay. One last question.
Sorry.
Okay. No.
On the last slide, you had pride and enviousness listed as two separate things, And so I was just wondering if you could explain the difference between them, because they seem somewhat similar.
Yeah, they are somewhat similar. There's many things in these methods of analysis where it's not totally dissimilar, but there are variations on the theme of. So it's more a matter of emphasis on this and emphasis on that when there's this kind of analysis. Now, would that help, or do I have to go further with it? Okay.
Thank you.
Over here.
Sorry, Krishna Maharaj.
Speak slowly.
Yep. I'm studying Bhagavatam, Canto 2, the universal form, and it shows that how to meditate on the universal form. And in that chapter, it shows that there are some stages of samadhi, of practice, like dharana, dhyana, and then samadhi. There are 6 different stages of yoga. So when we apply that same thing to our bhakti practice, so I was a little bit confused at how the dharana, at what stage actually the dharana become like stronger in practice of bhakti.
Well, several things. See if I can remember them all. Those first 3 chapters of Canto 2, this one you're referring to is Chapter 1, then 2 and 3, they're sequential, and they're all in response to the question at the end of Canto 1. What's the duty of the person who's about to die? And so the duty of the person about to die is to be engaged in unalloyed devotional service. So you could just say, you know, chapter 3, and he doesn't have to do chapter 1 and chapter 2. But he does chapter 1 and 2 for the benefit of others than Maharaj Parikshit, because Maharaj Parikshit is already a devotee. But chapter 1, this universal form, is form a personal conception of the source of everything, or of God, in short. Form a personal conception. And for those that have no personal conception, here's something that may help you. See God within the manifestations that you can see. They're aspects of God, the universal form. And the universal form, second, universal form within Canto 1, Chapter 2, is a different description of the universal form in Chapter 11, Bhagavad Gita. But it's the universal form, Virat Rupa, just a different description or different perspective, you can say. Now, at the end and the beginning of the next chapter, one is to let go of that and then see Paramatma, the Lord of the heart. So, personal conception, Lord of the heart, devotional service. It's sequential. So now, circling back to your question, the principle of the stages of meditation, they apply differently to chapter 1, chapter 2, and chapter 3. They certainly are different between chapter 1 and chapter 2, because chapter 2 is Paramatma, the Lord of the heart, the localized feature of the Supreme Lord. And those stages of meditation upon the Lord of the heart, the application of that principle of meditation upon is different than chapter 1. And it's connected to, but different application-wise in bhakti. Just like, here's a very practical example. We are doing mantra meditation. Like people ask, do you people have a process of meditation? Ah. Yavo, we have meditation. And so the mantra meditation application, Dhyan, Dharana, Samadhi, is different than the chapter 1, chapter 2, than chapter 3. But it's the same principle, just the application is different. So now, Having heard all that, you want to restate your question?
Yes. How can we apply that to bhakti?
How mantra, can we apply to
this
bhakti?
Mantra meditation, dhana, dhyana, samadhi.
Well, we apply it to bhakti in the stages of full concentration. And there's degrees of full concentration. You want the technical?
No, I just want to see that what stage the dhana at least, not even dhana become fixed.
They're louder than you. What stage?
The dhana process become fixed. I'm not only going
can
to
can somebody... Oh, there she goes. Sri Rupa knows how to handle the kids. Try it one more time.
What stage...
At what stage?
The dharana become fixed. I'm not talking about dhyana or samadhi. The initial dharana.
At what stage did it become fixed? Is it like her question, the nishtha? Yeah. So, the bhakti process mandates remembering Krishna. In nectar devotion, the rule that governs all the rules is remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. So it becomes fixed when there may be something going on over there. My residual attraction for something going on over there, but it doesn't take over my mind because bhakti is strong. My remembrance of Krishna is strong. You know, just like, you know, the herd of turtles upstairs. So it's distracting. And you know, so we heard it. But supposing I'm, you know, somebody's at the stage where, you know, the class is over because their mind is still disturbed over the herd of turtles and, you know, the unruliness of children that parents bring kids and they just run around and tear up the place and they don't care. But somebody, I know some people that's very disturbing for them and they can't, you know, class is over. You follow?
Yeah.
So the stage where it becomes fixed is where those distractions or disturbances, they're detected, but your attention stays with Krishna and the mood of carrying on with service to Krishna.
So it's nishtha, probably.
Yeah, nishtha. So it's not, the anarthas aren't gone, but they're not acting. They're not ruling and taking over your life, even for a while. It's just because bhakti is so strong or dhyan is so strong. You're fixing your mind upon Krishna and that becomes possible through service. The mood of service is so strong. I mean, I'm sure you have that experience from book distribution. Whatever it is, something. Somebody says something or it's too cold or the car breaks down or, you know, something. And you just stay fixed on the service.
But still there is a possibility of getting down if the offenses are there.
Yeah, sure. And nishtha is where that doesn't happen. The disturbance can come and go, but your attention stays. The determination to be continuing forward in pleasing Krishna in your service stays. Not just the service, but the mood of being with Krishna, in absorbed in Krishna's service. Abhinivesh, absorption. Krishna bhakti.
Thank you. One question?
Go ahead.
Okay. So Maharaj, you told that in case of Maharaj Bharat, it was not a prarabdha karma because karma is weak, become weak because of intense bhakti.
Yes.
But because it was of the his prarabdha karma because of his previous karma.
Yes.
So, but in the case of bhakti, when I was reading the commentary from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur for Bhagavad Gita, I was reading the commentary from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur on Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, verse 37.
Okay.
And it shows that bhakti destroy, jnana destroy a prarabdha. It doesn't destroy prarabdha because.
Right.
The body should be there to preach.
Right.
But bhakti destroy both the karma.
But bhakti does what?
Destroy both the karmas, aprarabdha and prarabdha.
Fantastic. So what's the problem?
In case of Bharat Maharaj, both karma should be destroyed because he was a
Lord. He was holding on to an unfulfilled desire. Bhakti has the power. He was holding on.
Our platform. His bhakti was strong because...
His bhakti was strong and he was holding on. It's right in the verse. Don't argue with Shukadeva Goswami, please. Bhakti has the power. He was holding on. Bhakti has the power. He was holding on. Is that right? Okay.
Because of my conditioning, if...
Because of the mind?
Because of my conditioning, if I am looking at devotees who are very loving as not so loving, is it an offense?
No, it depends on what's behind that seeing. The intelligence doesn't have to be shut in the opposition. We can discriminate this and that, and then with this and that we have some sense of connectivity to this and that, specifically very compassionate devotees and those that aren't. Now, with that, the power of discerning this from that is not a problem. It's what's beneath that that can be the problem.
Maharaj, we were talking about Kutilata, where generally one has a hidden agenda going on with his dealings. So, I was thinking...
Not everybody has it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I was thinking that sometimes when we are dealing with devotees, then we are holding back something just so that we don't want to hurt the devotee. We just say a few
things. That's not a problem. We're discriminating in our social dealings with others. That's not a hidden agenda. Unless there's a hidden agenda. I may be holding back because I want something, and I won't get the something I want if I hold back, and so I'll hold back. Because my externally I'm being polite, and internally I want something. That's the hidden agenda, the crookedness.
Sometimes it may also be that...
There's so many sometimes.
The
crookedness is what's behind your back. The hidden agenda, I want. It can be so many things, but that's the principle. The application of the principle is so many. So what should you do, or what should each of us do? Be self-honest and try to act in a straightforward manner. And the straightforward manner may be discriminating. I may not say this because I don't want to hurt the person's feelings. Mm-hmm. But then there's consequences of that also that you have to factor. The person may wonder, this person, I never know where they're at. They're never straightforward with me. And, so they may lose their trust in you. Etc. With every decision, there's consequences. And what we want ultimately is to please Krishna and make our hearts pure. So we did make decisions based on that and refine them as we go along, as more purity comes, because Krishna is kind and he helps make the heart pure. Then we have hopefully better judgment going into the future. We have to act moment to moment. So make the motivation pleasing Krishna, not some other agenda. And I, my power of discretion is faulty. Not maybe, it's faulty. But I have to act. I have to live in the world. Let me just focus on trying to please Krishna and depend on Krishna. Tadami buddhiyogam tam yenamam upiyanti te. Aham agyanajam tamaha, and so forth. Okay.
Thank you, Maharaj.
One last question back here, and we'll end.
Thank you so much for the wonderful class, Maharaj.
She always has these difficult questions. I'm ready for a difficult question.
Difficult question. After hearing this class, it's like more scared. Multiple questions in one. One is, it's so overwhelming that if you want to do something, it's like rather you just don't do it because it might lead to some offense or something. That is one question. And second question is, it looks like a big formula, and with current what we have to do, and we have the previous baggage already. So in such situations when you are falling down, what do we do at that times? And if it is the previous baggage which we are like, we took this process because of the baggage, we are helpless. How do we react in those conditions?
Well, knowledge doesn't make complexity. Knowledge tells you what's out there, and best, having knowledge, keep the heart simple. Be honest. To yourself, between your, you know, yourself and Krishna who is within your heart. Be honest. And rely on Him. And He's very kind. You know, before you knew these things, He knew these things. And now you know these things in addition to Krishna knowing these things. At least you know some of those things. So your relationship with Krishna hasn't been distanced. You just become... You can see things more clearly than you could before. That's what light of knowledge does. Now, therefore, I need to rely on Krishna even more because of all the reasons that you mentioned. It's an impetus for taking deeper shelter of Krishna from the heart level, the simple heart level. And there's all this complexity out there. And I can see it better now than I could. And you know, as you progress, you can see it more, more clearly. Just like turn the light on, and you can see things that you couldn't see when it was dark. It's not a problem. You just have, now you have knowledge instead of ignorance, and now you can make right choices instead of wrong ones. But the motivation to make the right ones instead of the wrong ones is shelter in Krishna. Deepen your heart's shelter taking in Krishna. Bottom line. That's what to do. You know how to act from the heart, I know. So just do that. You know how to act from the heart, so do that.
Thank you, Mother.
Don't get confused by, oh, now I know all these things. Okay, thank you very much. Prabhupada ki jai.